Welcome back to WCRB In Concert with Rockport Music, presenting Cantus. This group of eight singers puts long, long hours of collaborative thought into their programs. Joe Heitz has been their executive director since 2017. He finds himself just awestruck that the ensemble functions without an artistic director. It might sound like a small detail, he says, but in practice, it means that these eight singers have to cooperate throughout the entire creative process, from programming through rehearsals and, of course, ultimately on stage at a performance. And each of the eight singers brings a distinctive artistic vision. I think it's amazing that the process that they have designed has become so interesting. They even allow audiences into open rehearsals. Those must be really fascinating. Well, part two of Three Tales of Christmas covers more diverse territory, from Johnny Marks, Silver and Gold, to the old German carol, Lo, How a Rose Ere Blooming. And here is where you'll hear bass Chris Foss's new setting of Twas the Night Before Christmas. Here they are, tenors Jacob Christopher, Zachary Colby, Alberto de la Paz, and Paul Schultz. Basses are Chris Foss and Samuel Green, and baritones David Geist and Sam Kreidenweiss. Cantus on WCRB, In Concert.
Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding, ding dong. Silver and gold, silver and gold. Everyone wishes for silver and gold. How do you measure its worth? Just by the pleasure it gives here on earth. Silver and gold.
$1.87, that was all. And 60 cents of it was in pennies. Pennies saved one and two at a time by bulldozing the grocer and the vegetable man and the butcher until one's cheeks burned with the silent imputation of parsimony that such close dealing implied. Three times Della counted it, $1.87. And the next day would be Christmas.
Silver and gold.
There was clearly nothing to do but flop down on the shabby little couch and howl. So Della did it. Which instigates the moral reflection that life is made up of sobs, sniffles, and smiles, with sniffles predominating. Della finished her cry and attended to her cheeks with the powder rag. She stood by the window and looked out dully at a gray cat walking a gray fence in a gray backyard. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and she had only $1.87 with which to buy Jim a present. She had been saving every penny she could for months with this result. $20 a week doesn't go far. Expenses had been greater than she had calculated. They always are. Only $1.87 to buy a present for Jim, her Jim, Many a happy hour she had spent planning for something nice for him. Something fine and rare and sterling. Something just a little bit near to being worthy of the honor of being owned by Jim. Suddenly, she whirled from the window and stood before the glass. Her eyes were shining brilliantly, but her face had lost its color within 20 seconds. Rapidly, she pulled down her hair and let it fall to its full length. Now, there were two possessions of Jim and Della in which they both took a mighty pride. One was Jim's gold watch that had been his father's and his grandfather's. The other was Della's hair. Had the Queen of Sheba lived in the flat across the air shaft, Della would have let her hair hang out the window someday to dry, just to depreciate Her Majesty's jewels and gifts. Had King Solomon been the janitor, with all his treasures piled up in the basement, Jim would have pulled out his watch every time he passed, just to see him pluck at his beard from envy. So now Della's beautiful hair fell about her rippling and shining like a cascade of brown waters. It reached below her knee and made itself almost a garment for her. And then she did it up again, nervously and quickly. Once she faltered for a minute and stood still while a tear or two splashed on the worn red carpet. On went her old brown jacket, on went her old brown hat. With a whirl of skirts and with the brilliant sparkle still in her eyes, she fluttered out the door and down the stairs to the street.
Where she stopped, the sign read, Madame Sofronier, hair goods of all kinds. One flight up, Della ran and collected herself, panting. Madame, large, too white, chilly, hardly looked the Sofronier. Will you buy my hair? Asked Della. Down rippled the brown cascade. $20, said Madame, lifting the mass with a practiced hand. Oh, and the next 2 hours tripped by on rosy wings. She was ransacking the stores for Jim's present. She found it at last. It surely had been made for Jim and no one else. There was no other like it in any of the stores, and she had turned all of them inside out. It was a platinum fob chain, simple, chaste in design, properly proclaiming its value by substance alone, and not by meretricious ornamentation, as all good things should do. It was even worthy of the watch. As soon as she saw it, she knew that it must be Jim's. It was like him. Quietness and value. The description applied to both. $21 they took from her for it, and she hurried home with the 87 cents. With that chain on his watch, Jim might be properly anxious about the time in any company. Grand as the watch was, he sometimes looked at it on the sly, on account of the old leather strap that he used in place of a chain. When Della reached home, her intoxication gave way a little to prudence and reason. She got out her curling irons and lighted the gas and went to work repairing the ravages made by generosity added to love, which is always a tremendous task, dear friends, a mammoth task. Within 40 minutes, her head was covered with tiny, close-lying curls that made her look wonderfully like a truant schoolboy. She looked at her reflection in the mirror long, carefully, and critically. "If Jim doesn't kill me," she said to herself, "before he takes a second look at me, he'll say I look like a Coney Island chorus girl. What could I do? What could I do with $1.87?
At 7 o'clock, the coffee was made and the frying pan was on the back of the stove, hot and ready to cook the chops. Suddenly, Della heard Jim's step on the stair away down on the first flight, and she turned white for just a moment. Please God, make him think I am still pretty. The door opened and Jim stepped in and closed it. He looked thin and very serious. He needed a new overcoat, and he was without gloves. Jim stopped inside the door, as immovable as a setter at the scent of a quail. His eyes were fixed upon Della, and there was an expression in them that she could not read, and it terrified her. It was not anger, nor surprise, nor disapproval, nor horror, nor any of the sentiments that she had been prepared for. He simply stared at her fixedly with that peculiar expression on his face. "Jim, darling," she cried, "don't look at me that way. I had my hair cut off and sold because I couldn't have lived through Christmas without giving you a present. It'll grow out again. You won't mind, will you? I just had to do it. My hair grows awfully fast. Say Merry Christmas, Jim, and let's be happy. You don't know what a beautiful, nice gift I've got for you." "You've cut off your hair?" "Cut it off and sold it," said Della. "Don't you like me just as well anyhow? I'm me without my hair, ain't I?" "You say your hair is gone?" "You needn't look for it. It's sold, I tell you, sold and gone too. It's Christmas Eve, boy. Be good to me, for it went for you." "Maybe the hairs of my head were numbered, but nobody could ever count my love for you. Shall I put the chops on, Jim?" Out of his trance, Jim seemed quickly to wake. He enfolded his Della. Jim drew a package from his overcoat pocket and threw it upon the table. "Don't make any mistake, Del, about me. I don't think there's anything in the way of a haircut or a shave or a shampoo that could make me like my girl any less. But if you'll unwrap that package, you may see why you had me going a while at first." White fingers and nimble tore at the string and paper, and then an ecstatic scream of joy, and then, alas, a quick change to tears. For there lay the combs. The set of combs side and back that Della had worshipped long in a Broadway window. Beautiful combs, pure tortoiseshell with jeweled rims. Just the shade to wear in the beautiful, vanished hair. They were expensive combs, she knew, and her heart had simply craved and yearned over them without the least hope of possession. And now they were hers, but the tresses that should have adorned the coveted adornments were gone. But she hugged them to her bosom, and at length she was able to look up with dim eyes and a smile and say, "My hair grows so fast, Jim." Then Della leaped up like a little singed cat and cried, "Oh, oh!" Jim had not yet seen his beautiful present. She held it out to him eagerly upon her open palm. The dull, precious metal seemed to flash with a reflection of her bright and ardent spirit. "Isn't it a dandy, Jim? I hunted all over town to find it. You'll have to look at the time 100 times a day now. Give me your watch. I want to see how it looks on it." Instead of obeying, Jim tumbled down on the couch and put his hands under the back of his head and smiled. "Del," he said, "let's put our Christmas presents away and keep them a while. They're too nice to use just at present." "I sold the watch to get the money to buy your combs. And now suppose we put the chops on."
Oh, flowers fade. The Magi, as you know, were wise men, wonderfully wise men, who brought gifts to the babe in the manger. They invented the art of giving Christmas presents. Being wise, their gifts were no doubt wise ones, possibly bearing the privilege of exchange in case of duplication. And here I have lamely related to you the uneventful chronicle of two foolish children in a flat who most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasures of their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that of all who give gifts, these two were the wisest. Of all who give and receive gifts such as they are wisest. Everywhere they are wisest. They are the Magi.
Thank you very much. We really hope you enjoyed our versions of Gift of the Magi by O. Henry, and of course, before that, A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. If you're particularly observant, you've noticed that the title of the show is called Three Tales of Christmas. So two down, one to go. And spoiler alert, the final tale has to do with a reindeer and stockings and a mischievous little old man who likes to go around breaking into people's houses in the middle of the night. And now, the legend of Santa Claus, of course, is one of the most well-known around the world. So well-known, in fact, that almost every child, when they get to a certain age, their favorite question to ask is Santa really real? And how easy is it to chalk the idea of Santa Claus up to just some heartwarming piece of fiction that only serves to put the smile on a child's face, and that's it? I don't know, but I keep coming back to these words that were published in the New York Sun over 100 years ago. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor adults can see. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders there are unseen and unseeable in the world. Now, you can tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside, but there is a veil covering the unseen world, which not the strongest person, nor even the strength of all the strongest people that ever lived, could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond.
And shouted and called them by name. dressed all in fur, from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he has slung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack.
The men's ensemble Cantus with their Christmas program, Three Tales of Christmas, ending their with Chris Foss's new setting of "Twas the Night Before Christmas." That was sung at the Shillinloo Performance Center here in Rockport, Massachusetts, on WCRB in Concert. I'm Kathy Fuller. Very happy audience here. The singers look happy, too. It looks like they've got something else for us.
Thank you so much. My heavens, this is the most beautiful place that I have ever sung in my entire life. What an amazing hall, and it sounds so great on stage, and I hope it sounds as good out there as it does up here. Very special thank you to the staff here at Shillinloo, and thank you so much for having us in your beautiful little town of Rockport. What a lovely place. We've had just an excellent time. We have one more for you, if you'd like. This piece needs very little introduction. It has been a standard repertoire for men's choruses. This is Franz Biebel's Ave Maria.
Oh.
That's the men's vocal ensemble Cantus with a beautiful encore, Franz Biebel's Ave Maria. Many thanks to the staff here at Rockport Music and to WCRB's lead engineer, Antonio Oliart-Rose. Thanks also to the 8 singers of Cantus for making this program possible. I'm your host and producer of this episode of WCRB in Concert, Kathy Fuller. Our executive producer is Brian McCreath.